Session number 11207, row 2.
Mr. J.F. Bell, reel 2. Were you still with the second? Sorry, the first battalion, Mr.
No,
Bell?
We'd been cross-posted to the second battalion in India. We joined them in Bombay in, March 35.
And this was as a reinforcement to the
second battalion? Yes. Well, what really happened, you see, is that blokes had finished their time and they were going home. Now, in them days, the troopman season was from September to March. So if you had had your 7 year in, you see, and you were due to come home, we'll have to send somebody out to sort of reinforce the battalion, you see. So as we went there, well, the people were going home. Well, we went to Bombay and we went to Diwali. And there was... The thing was, you see, that what we found out later, I'm talking about when we got there, we got rigged out in khaki drill and all this sort of thing. And what used to happen, you had two companies at Doolally, two companies and HQ in Bombay. And every 3 months, they used to change over. You do 3 months in Doolally and then 3 months in Bombay, then back to 3 months in Doolally again, you see.
Whereabouts was Doolally from Bombay?
Oh, it's just up, it's more like a little, not very far, up in the hills, you see. More like a change of, it was more pleasant there, climate-wise, than what it was in Bombay. Bombay was a humid, sticky place. I hope, if you want to remember about Bombay, we had mechanical punkers in.
What's a mechanical punker?
You've seen these blokes sitting with their domes, with their flaps. But these were made with a long streak down the barrack room, and the whole lot used to move clanking on. You got used to it eventually, you know. And, them sort of things, the place was lousy with bugs and what have you. And there was a book CD in Bombay, this was. You could go to the stores and draw a blow lamp out and blow your bed out. Burn your bed, burn all the eggs and what have you out your bed.
And what was the accommodation that you went into in Bombay?
Well, Bombay itself was the old Victorian barracks. You've seen them on the pictures I described. Big stone blocks, you know. And it was proper old Victorian barracks. As I say, they had the mechanical punkers in. And you mounted guard on there, you know, that's all. You know, I mean, it's... Well, that's where I went to be a coot there. They sent me up to Pune on a coast course. The date will be in there somewhere. And come back. Oh, I know I'll tell you a little bit before. I don't know, I'm getting lost now. the only time I ever did detention was in Bombay. Now, I don't know whether you heard about it or not. Grant Road... Sacklady Street was the proper area. Now, the native area, all had cages on, you know, like the bars of a prison cell. So we four of us, we'll go and have a look. We knew if you got caught, you got 10 days in the cells.
This would be out of bounds.
Yeah, it was out of bounds. So anyway, we said, we'll try, we had a couple of pints, we'll go and have a look. We didn't intend going in, we had no intention. We just stepped out the bitty taxi and the others. Four of us. So we automatically got 10 days, you know. There was no trial and all that. I just said, right, 10 days in the cell. The only time I ever did detention.
What was life like under detention?
Oh.
Can you describe it?
Oh, can I describe it? Well, you're in a cell. In a bunk and that, like, you know, but he did 2 hours packed drill every day. That was full marching order. And you did it. And to keep you employed, they used to give you some old, like fire bucket things, and you used to have to burnish them, you know, clean them, and that was your job. The only thing you got was a Bible. All the cells had a Bible in. The grub, you get a plate of porridge on the morning and a cup of tea, and there was a proper diet laid down for this. And really, it wasn't much, you know. A tin of soup at dinner time, and that was your, you know, a little bit of pudding or something at the night, and that was your lot.
Was your hair shaved, anything like
that? Oh, no. And everywhere you went, you doubled. If there was any fatigue, so I doubled. Of course, it was only our own people, see. It wasn't like being in the military prison. It was only in our own. But anyway, what annoyed me about it, 3 weeks after, they put the place in bounds. They got a new brigadier. And he said, well, we'll have open 3 or 4 brothels down there to try and cut the VD out, you see. This is the whole idea.
Was there a great deal of VD
in the battalion? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is one of the biggest crimes in the British Army at them time. I'll tell you about it later on. When we get further on, I'll tell you about that. But anyway, they sent me on a cruise course. I come back. Right, I'm all full of doing with white shirt on, white slacks on, and go in the cookhouse. Right, I forget what it was for dinner, meat pie or something. Right, I'll make the pastry. But we had 3 Indian cooks. I said, hey, we get paid for this job, not you. Get out. All the time we were in India, all I used to do was peel the spuds at dinner time. But you didn't peel the spuds before, you cooked them, you see, and then just peeled them off. The 3 cooks, they said, that's our job, not yours.
So these were Indian civilians?
Oh, yes, yeah. They've been with the battalion for years. One, Poole, he'd been with the battalion since 1920.
Was there other forms of civilian labour in the...
Oh, yeah, you had your sweepers and all this sort of thing, you know. They used to keep the barracks clean, and you had your charwarers, you know, as you've seen on Half Mop Mum, and the Dobie, of course. Well, they used to come 3 times a week, then.
Were they paid, or did you have to pay them? No,
they stopped so much a month out of doing that covered. You got shaved in bed on the morning. No, it's a horrible sensation, you know, the pest time. You're lying there with mosquito net on, all of a sudden it's just breaking daylight. And you feel so... But, you know, you got used to it. I had all these native doings employed there. You know, the cooks and the bearers and all this sort of thing, you see.
So what was your duties and responsibilities with having so much civilian labour doing these kind of jobs, which you would have done in England, of course?
Yeah, but, you see, you did no parades in afternoon. Everything was worked early morning or late afternoon, see, to avoid the heat of the sun, more or less, you see. But of course, these people had always been employed there. Actually, you know, the life was a bit boring at times because there was nothing at Doolally, there was nothing. There was a picture house there. It was about 2 miles out of the barracks. And they only had the one projector. So when that reel was finished, the lights used to go on while they changed the reel. And you got the blowers coming around trying to sell you monkey nuts and whatever they had, you know. Instead of, you know, the picture taking maybe an hour, it taking about 2 hours by the time they changed the reel, one thing or another. And, you know, I think it was done twice or three times a week. Right? And in the barracks itself, the main thing was sport. I mean, this was what he did at Doolally. In more sport, tie yourself out so you could sleep.
What kind of sport were you involved in?
Tell you a little story. Rugby. We're playing B Company, A and B Company were up there, company teams. And we got started. There was a few spectators on the sideline. And I said, what's going on here? Every time I look round, there ain't no rugby in it, dear. And they lose more, all in the one place, all the time. So we'll get down and have a look. The young lass sat on the side, so you could see him. So every time somebody got the ball, they all went down there. The best player, the referee was there further. And they took him coming out, they twiggered. You off. He chased her like.
This was a European girl.
Oh, yes, yeah. He was a major in the ROC or something, the Ordnance Corps or something.
Were there many European families out with the troops?
No, only the married families. Only like the married sergeant and people like that. I don't know, get back, in them days you weren't allowed married quarters or nothing until you were 26 year old. You weren't supposed to even be married without a say over the permission. Right? So the only Europeans we saw were married families, you see. And, we had two, didn't we? We had what do you call them now? Clapton, I think. Captain Clapton. We got into a bit of money. As far as we could make, a little buzzers. One aunt had died, left him 20,000, and somebody else had died and left him. So, come on, I said, what's going on? Oh, Fox Hunt. Because he was one of these county class people, the hounds and all this, him and his wife. So I said, right, anybody want to go down the mule lines, because that's all we had, mules. And, all right, we'll go and have a look. They let the fox out the box, don't ask me where he got it. But the dogs took one look and off. The fox had sat there. Even the mules wouldn't go after it. But anyway, sort of broke the monotony for a bit.
So there weren't many duties to keep you busy?
Well, just the guards. You were always on standby for riots and things like that.
Were there any problems with the native population?
We never had any. But we used to practice it. I don't know why. Make it, something like, get to bed. Be a quarter out of turn out fully equipped after the alarm went. But we nearly, never really, we played around a bit. One or two, could have been, but they died off. You go down in lorries with wire netting over the top. So they started throwing bottles and things at you. They did the wire netting and doing. But not really, no, we never had any trouble.
Did you get much opportunity to meet and be with the natives?
No, we wouldn't, if you know what I mean. You come to work, we never really did. Well, we never put ourselves out there. One or two of the lads might have, but we didn't, you sort of kept yourself apart from them.
How did the men as a whole overcome the problems of not having female companionship?
Well, I don't know, really. It just wasn't there, so he didn't bother. I don't think I can remember any case of homosexualities. We might have had one. But we're talking about the regiment now, No, we didn't. I didn't know, they used to joke and mess about, but I never known anybody that was a homosexual. Of course, in them days, they'd have banged them straight out if they got to know. That's one thing they wouldn't stand for. So I don't know,
What was the relationship between yourselves and the officers?
No relationship, really. You didn't sit and talk to them or anything like that. You just said yes, sir, no, sir, and all that. Whether they did with the batman or anybody like that, I don't know. But all you did, just answer the question. They didn't sort of, there was no mixing. They were officers and you were the men and that's it, you see.
Was there any resentment at all between men and officers?
A little bit. I never witnessed this myself, but I'll give you an example. We'll read it later on. See, this was at Bombay. When you were on guard, eh, as soon as it became dark, you put your rifle in the racks, all your rifle in racks with chains through. They give you a shotgun. And this particular officer, I forget his name now, he thought he was clever. He was always trying to cast the guard out. Now this night, he'd come round and bang. He didn't hit him, like, over his head. He said, look, I challenge you. He said, you never said a word. You ducked behind the edge. He said, next time you'll get it. Then you got one officer, but he always seemed to get the one that seemed to be catching you out all the time, see? So I don't...
Is there anything else about India you'd like to say, Mr. Bell?
Yeah, well, the thing is, you see, we were never mechanised. Even at Catrick, all we had was horses. He went to India, all we had was mules. Eh? So we left India in January 1936 to go to the Sudan, Khartoum. And that's the first time we ever had, we had little 1500 weight trucks. Eh? And, you know, I've often looked back and wondered, you know, that even right away up to us leaving England, we left in February 35, they were just starting to mechanise then.
Eh? Is there anything in the training at the time which you felt was rather silly or useless in any way? Particularly bearing in mind what you had to come to when the war started.
Well, you didn't know what you had to come to. That was the trouble. I mean, to me, like, looking back, we still lived in 1914 area. I mean, we hadn't an idea of air raids or nothing. You see... Well, we had nothing to do with it, you know, didn't even know what they were. And, you know, they used to tell Lewis Quinacac and all this sort of business. But really, you hadn't a clue. You know, if you're going to look, you know, in between, we talk about dive bombers and things like this, you hadn't a clue. Yeah? And even tanks and things like that. Right? We never did any training with tanks. Once you got out of this country, in India, there was no tanks.
Did you do any manoeuvres in India?
Well, you did the normal manoeuvring training, you know, a bit of marching, a bit of cover and fire and all this sort of thing. But the training you mainly did was for the frontier. Right? They still had the troops on the northwest frontier, like they have today, you know. And they did that sort of training where he sent patrols up either side, you know. But I didn't. I was a cook. Eh?
And so you were still in the cookhouse peeling your potatoes?
Yeah, I was still there with the three Indian cooks. And the charwala. The charwala used to go with you on training. Eh? So...
So what time did your day start as a cook?
Hmm?
What time of day did you start your work in the cookhouse?
I didn't. The boy used to come and wake me up at Rue Valley with a cup of tea. We'd get up and get washed and changed. And the only thing we had to do was to go and draw the rations. Eh? On the mule cart, go down, draw the rations, bring them back, take them in the cookhouse, and that was finished. Till we went to Khartoum. And there was no there was no native cooks. We had to start getting the cookery books out.
So when did you move to Khartoum?
January 36.
And do you recall...
No, 37.
Do you recall that particular journey?
Well, we got to Port Sudan. We were on the train, and how long we were on that train, I haven't a clue. We just seemed to go on and on and on and on till we got there. And, you know, really, we're looking out the window, and you would actually see some of the game running around, you know, giraffes and things like that. As you went through, but when we got there, I don't know if Khartoum, but can't remember much in getting there. And all I know it was bloody warm.
And what were your impressions of the country? First impressions?
Nothing there. Just sand. Everything, so there's no vegetation, no trees, nothing like that. There are a few trees in the town itself, like, but outside there was nothing. Just, you know, a scrubby desert. Huh?
And where were you barracked?
over in Ballington, South Khartoum, which is the main part, and the Black Watch was in North Khartoum, which is where the, what call it, Omdurman battlefield was. And we got settled in, we had, and went in the cook house, no native cook, so we had to start and get cracking.
So this, in effect, was your first cooking?
First actual, and you with cooking for 800 men, you've got to get going.
So what was your day like? What was a typical day as a cook, as a battalion cook?
Oh, a typical day. Well, the reveille there was at 5:30, I think. Yeah. You see, there you did 5:30 till 8:30. Then you were finished till 4:30, but not us. You went in the cookhouse and you got cracking and you did whatever was necessary, you know, whatever grub that was laid on, you know. The meat. Now then, as far as I know, as far as I presume, the meat used to come in warm. See, there's no freezers in them days and nothing like that. They used to kill the beast at 4:00 in the morning or 3:00 in the morning, skin it and bring it to us, and it was still warm. Well, of course, you had to cook it straight away. Right?
And was this coming from civilian contractors?
Oh, I don't know where the meat came from. No, I don't know. That came in, you know. And the other stuff like, you know, tea, sugar and milk and all that sort of stuff was in. But there was no freezers or nothing like that. Right? You couldn't say... I don't know whether that any... No, I can't remember any place where it was really cool, you know, where you could put stuff in and so everything had to be cooked, you know, practically the same day. See?
So what would you be cooking for a typical breakfast in the Sudan from reveille at 5:30?
Well, it'd be bacon. It'd be bacon and tomato, tin tomatoes. See? Well, the bacon, or you'd put it in a tray and shoved it in the oven, you see? You didn't fry nothing, you know. Or sometimes it'd be liver and onions. So, you see, the thing is, you got your rations pounded there. So you pound of meat. Well, you imagine getting... And everything in that meat had to be used. You see, you just didn't go and say, right, oh, I want a bit of roast today and a bit of stew tomorrow. You had to use the whole lot up. So,
this was a pound of meat per man?
Yeah, per man. Yeah. So, all the fat and everything was took off and rendered down. So, and it cooked majority of it the same day. Right?
And what form did you eat the meat?
Oh, it was roasted, boil it, or whatever, you know, mince it, or, you know, whatever they had on the menu, you see, on the, you know, menu.
Was it good quality?
Wasn't too bad. One day a week, I think it was Thursday, they didn't cook meat. They brought Tindy McConaughey's out. I'm damn sure it was off the First World War. With every two tins of man or whatever it was, you see. So I don't know. But that one day a week he used to have McConaughey's. That's like a tinned stew and, you know. And I'm sure it was what they had in the First World War.
So you had breakfast, and then you'd have lunch about what time?
1:00.
And you were busy cooking for the lunch?
Yeah, and then you had tea at 5, see.
And what form would tea take?
Oh, sort, maybe bully or something like that, you know. I can't remember now, you know. I mean, just, you know. But anyway, that's where they, we're jumping now. He said to me, right, you, Gebeet. Gebeet, where the hell's that? Up in the hills. And me and a lad from South Shields, Chalky White, went up. Looked, few huts, miles from nowhere, cook house with a big stove in it, and look round, they used to put the coal and the wood up on camels. Anyway, we got to, and I thought, Sonny, these...
Who was up there at this place?
Oh, just a detachment of the lads. It's more like a change of air, you know, like breaking the heat of monotony, you see. See, Khartoum, it used to get 140. Which is not very pleasant, eh? And it was more of a change of air camp, eh?
And you were up there, and you were cooking there.
Yeah. cooking there. And as I say, like this business with a gazelle, I told you. And this sergeant, they got himself lost. And we used to chase the vultures off the bloody veranda on the morning. The water was there, so you know, a bit of water there, and chase them on the morning. Vultures.
Can you describe how the sergeant got lost?
Well, they went to shoot and shoot, trying to get a gazelle, you know, deer. So they went up, three of them, two officers and this sergeant. And when they were getting down, the two officers came back and said, "Where's he?" I said, "We don't know, we lost him." And that's when they had to send the village up with these torches.
And they found him?
Oh, they found him, yeah. I'm forgetting his name now, you know, it was such a long time ago.
So what time were you finished cooking and you could relax? Did you have relaxing times, relaxing spells during the day?
Oh, yeah. Once you got dinner over, you could say, "Oh, well, I've got an hour, you know, a couple of hours for tea time," you see. And then after tea, well, that was it. Eh? But if you were taking you back to Khartoum, if you rode the cook, you slept in the cook house, on the table.
And what was the job of the orderly cook?
That was to get the breakfast and everything ready, you see. Normally, the ordinary cooks wouldn't start till about 7. Well, you would have to get all the breakfast ready. Little incident. Orderly cook. I had to learn a cook with us. And there were steam vats. Big things. So to make the porridge, you used to get two 7-pound tins of oatmeal. You put it in a bin, thin it down, then pour it into this. So I forget what I was doing now. I said, "Oh, the porridge, oh, it's a bit thin." And when I looked, he'd poured it down the side and it all stuck. So when we tried to get it off, you know, and it looked. I see, second in command, Lyside Griffiths, he used to go around the dining hall and say, "Why haven't you wet that?" So he comes in, the cook, I was up, destroying government property and God knows what. And went there, severely reprimanded. So I marched out, marched me back in, returned me to duty, but he wouldn't. I mean, it was my fault in one way, but this lad, I'll do that. Right, oh. Instead of pouring it in the middle, he'd poured it down the damn side and it stuck on the side. But anyway, come back to this gabit business. I think I told you about the... did I tell you about the gazelle? I'd gone out on the morning, just breaking dawn, and there was a gazelle there, and it didn't run away. Oh, you got over it, and I shoved it in the hut with my hands. "Here, here's a gazelle for you." Oh, yes, smashing, you know. The next day, the village headman come up. "Have you seen a gazelle?" "No, we haven't seen it." He said, "It belongs to my son. It's his pet." "Ah." So when he brought the lad up and the gazelle jumped on his shoulder, it was like a dog would, and licking his face, I said, "Right, fair enough." He said, "Well, I'll bring you one." When he did, he brought us a little, you know, like a lamb. And the trouble was feeding it. But all we had was tinned milk. So one of the lads said, "Oh, I've got a couple of French letters here, we'll try it with that." And of course, as soon as it bit it, the bloody thing just busted. We tried it with a spoon. So one of the lads said, "Hey, there's some sheep up there, look there." "Ah, right, oh, we'll go and see if we can get out of one of them, get some milk off it." As we got up there, two bloody fuzzy wuzzies there. Bandoliers on, rifles, swords and the lot. So we came back. Then what we're going to do? And with a Sudanese come past with a flock of sheep. They give him a shout over and haggled a bit. Right, he said, and he just took over it and stuck it under one of the ewes. It cost us, I think it was 10 acres or something. Picked it up, rattled it. Come back in the morning. Every morning he used to be there. But anyway, when we went back to the regiment at Khartoum, we left it up there. We won the storm and said, "Now look after it. You know, we won't take it down the heat till it gets up a bit." No, we thought we had a mascot. So when he came down, I said, "Where's the gazelle?" "Oh," he said, "they've got out and the dog got it." Oh, we didn't have green milk. But it was comical. Well, 20 of us scratching our head out to feed it.
How did you find the natives? Were you again in contact with them in any
in the Sudan? There's one thing, we couldn't treat them like you did an Indian. You couldn't kick his backside and out like that. He'd turn around and flatten you. They were a different race altogether. A different race even from the Egyptians. They were an independent race. They would do the job, but you couldn't mess them about. Oh, they were terrific. Were the one the cook used to come in the cookhouse. I don't think he was employed by us, but he was about 6'3". And I said, where are you been? Oh, he said, I've been in the clink, in the chain gang. And they used to there. You see them with the shackles on, and the chain gang on the roads. And, of course, we had no electrical appliances, like, you know, the cool. I was a bloody big mincer. It'd take two of us to turn. He used to turn with one hand. You know, we were doing mince or a wrist was out like that. I don't know. But, you know, I mean, no, the Sudanese, you could not mess them about.